Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Nate Rosen, founder of Express Checkout, a weekly newsletter dedicated to the latest updates and trends in the world of CPG, retail, e-commerce, and supply chain. With over 2,800 industry leaders on the mailing list, Express Checkout has become a must-read for me, and also for those of us in the world of CPG and those who report on it. Prior to creating the newsletter, Nate was chief of staff at Agile Media Group and worked at Settle on the partnerships team. He also helps run First Look Ventures, the syndicate arm of First Look VC. Welcome, Nate.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm psyched you're here. I sent you a draft. I want to have a two-part pod.
Cool.
First part. Is like industry insights. You know, everyone who listens to this knows that I love my founder friends. I love interviewing a great operator. But I really love when I have guests who get that like 30,000 foot view and can kind of like summarize themes. That is really fun for me. And then the second part, we'll talk about newsletters in general, yours,
sure.
Best practices, et cetera, because I have a feeling that there are going to be more of them.
I think that feeling is correct.
Yes. So thoughts on the industry, trends, what you're seeing, insights, mistakes to avoid, all of that. What I love, and I am like, you can tell probably that I open it and I click through. I'm like, I don't know if you can see that kind of data.
you can see a surprising amount.
Okay. I'm definitely in there and I definitely look forward to it. I like the breadth of it. I like that you're able to aggregate a lot of different information from a lot of the different places. And it also still feels kind of like personal and good, like fun.
Yeah.
So we all know there's been this like bracing for the big one, kind of like this culling, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's no money. Money was drying up. Consumers aren't buying anything. All of that. I'm kind of curious on like your thoughts there. What's happening with the money?
I think the money's still there. Mm-hmm. I'm still seeing a lot of brands closing rounds. Obviously, we don't know when those rounds really started. Mm-hmm. Some of those could be have gone on for many years, and they're sort of just closing it now. Mm-hmm. Some of those, they were able to get good strategics in and good funds in, and no problemo. Generally, what I'm hearing from a lot of my founder friends and some operators, and even some VCs, they're having trouble raising. I think a lot from the VC side, I think a lot of investors are wanting to see a lot more growth. They want to see, up and to the left movement on a variety of different metrics, mostly profitability. Mm-hmm. They want to see more retail distribution, whatever it is, they want to see, you know, up and to the right.
Right.
And it's definitely, I think it's definitely getting to some founders. It's like frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially when in years past, they were able to get at least conversations going really quickly and a lot of interest from a lot of different players. But it's definitely feel like it's slowed down, hasn't gone away. There's still plenty of money to go around. Mm-hmm. But funds are definitely being a little bit more tight with their money going out. They're being a little bit more particular, especially the ones that probably have, you know, a bigger name behind them. They might've made some investments in the past based off of hype or
a little
vibes.
Bit of momentum investing, as they call it. I'm like, exactly. That's not a thing.
Right. It was a thing in like 21.
Yeah. It's just, it's like, that means that I don't have a thesis around this other than it's got momentum, which is not a thesis. So
right.
That was my little bugaboo. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only brands now that sort of get that, we don't have a lot going on, but we're going to do well money, are brands that have started with founders who have done in the past, they've succeeded, they have the connections, they can hit the ground running, mm-hmm. either with distributors, with retailers, maybe it's just D2C, maybe it's Amazon, whatever it is, they can get it going very quickly. Like, right. I think Gorgie sort of fits into that mm-hmm. bucket.
Yeah,
she's
Michelle.
A second time. Yeah. Yep. She's great. Second time founder. I think they have the largest pre-seed raise for food and bev.
Oh, wow. I mean, beverage is like nutso, the money.
That's something else.
Yeah. I mean, she came on the pod a couple months ago and she just was like, I mean, she hasn't been at it for all that long, but she was basically like, no problem. Like, it's all good. I got this. This is great. And like, I would
well.
Be like under, you know, a bed, basically thinking about a beverage brand, especially today. One thing I thought what you were going to say was the ones that are having an easier job are the ones with a celebrity or a content creator behind them. And I've had a few of those on lately.
Yeah.
And it does seem like do you listen to Pivot at all with Scott Galloway and Kara?
I don't, but okay. I do know.
So it's like one of my favorite things. And this guy wrote in a question and he was asking about networking. Mm-hmm. And basically Scott was like, networking is the same funnel as any sales or marketing. There's like the pre-buy, the pre-purchase, the awareness building, the point of sale. And then there's the, you know, retention, right?
Yeah.
And anything can be kind of put into those three sort of pieces of a funnel, which I think is a really neat way to kind of look at everything.
It's interesting.
I do think that and I said this hopefully not offensively to my content creator friend led brands, they take care of number one. They take care of that whole pre, mm-hmm. you know, top of funnel awareness. You don't have to spend at all getting attention. It just feels like there's a lot that has to happen after that.
On paper, they can be a very good bet because they can hit the ground running. They have a built-in audience. They've already done, as you're saying, all of that legwork. But after the fact, I think there's some creator and celebrity brands who don't necessarily want to run, build, operate the business beyond the fact of launching and beyond the hype of launching.
Right.
I don't think it's everyone, but there's definitely some here or there that start to falter simply because
it's not that fun anymore.
and you know, their job and what they've really like built a whole thing about is being a creator. And that's what they're really good at. And I think a lot of times a creator or a celebrity should join a brand more as like this marketing growth engine rather than, you know, the founderhood. But there's plenty of examples where there's celebrity and creators create a brand that's like very true to them. It's really solving something that they had an issue with, they had a problem with, and it does great. Like yeah. Jennifer Garner's brand, I think, is a wonderful example of that.
Yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite celebrity-owned brands.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had Ari Raz on, and John Foraker, actually. They've both been guests on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great, you know, Ari's the first person to say when he, because he was the founder. He was there for, I think, 5 years before John and Jen came in. But, you know, he's like, I could never. I mean, they went from like a normal sort of, yes, we're gaining this and we're getting Wegmans. And then we got another region of Whole Foods, you know, to just like, just a powerhouse.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I think that's when you have that perfect, you know, you have Jen as like that engine of awareness and that engine of brand. And then you have John, who's like an expert operator for years and years and years.
Yeah. I actually think I heard this on your podcast about how she would go into the Whole Foods meetings with the buyers.
Yeah.
I think that was on your podcast. I heard this. Yeah, that was a great story.
I know. I was thinking about the Goodles thing, and I was wondering if Wonder Woman goes in. Like, does Gal Gadot go into the, like, Publix sales
meeting? My assumption is not. I think she should. I think she would have fun with it. I mean, it's a fun brand. They've got great traction. She's not really working right now. So it's perfect.
Yeah, perfect. I know. It's funny. Well, I have a reality star on my cap table. And we had a whole plan to do demos together, but I wanted it to be like candid camera-y. Like I wasn't going to like publicize that he was doing the demos with me.
It's a fun way to do it.
But like some mom or whatever, like fan of the show would walk up and be like, wait, is that you? You know, but then I ended up not being able to get out to California. So alas, I'll have to do it next year. I'm going to say something sounds a little sour grapes. I would just like you to make me feel a little better about it or shed some light on it. I have a little bit of this feeling like these celebrities and the content creators and these brands are hogging a little bit of consumer attention and also the VC money. And I know it's smart, and I understand for the VCs it's a good bet because at least they have that part of the funnel taken care of. And I get totally why celebrities want to not just like do a cologne in Hong Kong, but they want to like actually have a brand and like be a founder. I get that that's cool and all of that, but it's annoying. I'm just going to be honest. I respect all of them. I understand everything. And yet as someone who's like, we have to claw and scratch for any mention in any listicle, in anything we can get for like any awareness whatsoever. Tell me what's going to happen. Tell me what's happening to us and tell me what's happening to the world.
I think right now we're like going through this, not a bubble because it's sort of always been around, but it's just louder than normal, this celebrity creator brand space. I don't think it's going away. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I think we'll start to see a transition to fewer celebrity creator founders and more, more of these sponsorship sort of talent venture deals, more so than these founders. But I think there's a lot of brands out there that we also just don't see.
Right.
They're not at Expo. Maybe they're not at even fancy food. They're there, they're operating, they're building locally, they're building where they're planted, and they're slowly expanding. CPG is, as you know, a very long-term game.
Yeah.
It can take a while to really get to a point where you are as well-known as our X Bar, or even bigger, Kind Bar, or Cliff Bar. I don't know why I'm using bars, but those are easy.
Yeah.
I think there's still a lot of hope. None of that's going away. If anything, I think there's more people creating their own brands than there are celebrities and content creators creating their own brands. They just happen to hog a little bit more of the LinkedIn, of your PR. But I think that's kind of just a bias of who you're looking at. You're looking at a lot of industry people. Like we talking this audience chamber. Here is we're a big echo chamber. And like a lot of my friends who are normal, who are normal people, they go to a grocery store and they don't go, oh, I know that person.
Right, exactly.
Oh, we financed this deal.
Right.
They're just like, this looks tasty.
Yeah.
They know like four celebrity brands.
Right, right.
They know it much is, more.
It's never the same. It's like, it's funny. I posted something on LinkedIn for Rosh Hashanah that I had made my third like shidduch, basically. Yeah. Like I, not of marriage, but of like an operator with like and a brand. And I've sort of been like, I might not be able to find you a boyfriend or like a spouse, but I can find you a head of ops. I can find you a marketing sometimes person. Better. Like honestly, sometimes better. And in like the Jewish tradition, you know, even if that marriage ends up breaking up for whatever reason, like you still get the credit. And if you get three of them, you go to heaven. So that was like my Rosh Hashanah post. And then someone was basically, someone commented something like, what would CPG heaven look like? You know, like we went on this like tangent of like, I know, cause there is a lot of unpacking to do about the people that choose to be a part of this ecosystem, because there's something a little, you know, funny about
loose,
all of us.
Some loose screws in us.
For sure. It's like when I used to work in hospitality, we always sort of referred to ourselves as like Island of the Lost Toys people. Like there's something about wanting to put something into the world that doesn't exist that makes people happy, and also just dealing with like constant harassment that makes us a particular breed.
Pain and suffering.
Why I got into like the heaven situation, but you were saying something about, I think the brands, there are these brands and that's the good part. I mean, again, if you listen to this a lot, you've probably heard me say this a lot, but like I was around for the last big, you know, money, financial, economic downturn.
Yeah.
And it bred so much innovation and ingenuity and scrappiness and creativity. I remember a couple of years ago, there were, you know, a lot of brand friends of mine, founder friends of mine, myself included, we were not shiny objects. So we were not VC darlings. And that felt a little crappy.
Of course.
Because we didn't have that sort of pre-launch story that was going to like disrupt whatever industry for whatever. We didn't get $5 million in pre-launch, you know, pre-revenue anything with a whatever valuation. And so this is just like a little bit of a, maybe a little bit of a level setting where if you are one of those brands that's just making something good and your velocity strong and you're able not to spend a lot doing it and your margins are just kind of going in a good direction, you might actually be able to get some attention. It's probably just like the middle brands that are neither nor that
they're not quite there. They might be at a point where they need that little bit of capital, but they haven't reached a certain velocity or revenue threshold for these funds to be like, yes, we want to put some cash in here. So they have to work a little bit harder. But yeah, there will be, you know, culling of the herd a little bit. I think it's already sort of happened. I think some of this M&A activity we've seen, I think some of it's good. Some of it's probably not as good as it
the outcomes
looks on the outside.
Wanted. Right.
Right.
And tell me about other themes. You know, I picture you at your typewriter.
You got a typewriter.
Every week, like with your pencil in your ear, you know, kind of, you know, scanning the industry for interesting things. And I would imagine that like word bubbles or writing a term paper, themes start popping up. What's been in your brain that you're like, huh, this tracks with my, you know, with my little theme that I'm seeing emerging lately?
I think one of the things I've seen a lot more of is discussion around C-stores.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be gaining some momentum, both in terms of like brands being like, maybe I should go to 7-Eleven, mm-hmm. or just acquisition within the space of like certain C stores acquiring each other, growing, becoming more of a destination, sort of that wah-wah Sheetz effect.
Yeah.
Sort of seeping its way into other C stores and other, you know, roadside attraction stores.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good one, because I think it also sort of tangential to that is the Walmart discussion, which is definitely like on people's minds.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was that article about the dollar store, but how there were all these like luxury cars parked in the parking lot of the dollar store. Yep. So I get it. Is it just like people just don't want to spend more than they have to? And
I think that's always been the case. Like
except for Whole Foods.
Except for Whole Foods.
And Air One.
Air One's a whole nother story. Look, I try a lot of stuff. I get some stuff sent to me. I buy plenty of stuff. But the way I normally buy is not really what you think I would be buying.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty price conscious. Mm-hmm. I don't like to pay more than I necessarily have to. Like, I don't want to just pay for brand.
Yeah.
I'll pay up to a certain point. I don't mind paying more for something as long as it's the best thing that I can buy, or the best tasting thing, or something, or something like that. So like with like skincare, for example, like CeraVe or La Roche-Posay, or like, I'm not necessarily going to go up, because for me, it doesn't add much more value, besides if somebody goes into my cabinet and be like, oh, you have that? Mm-hmm. That's really nice. No one's going into my cabinet. This isn't like a backpack or anything.
I've
like
only
that.
Had one. I'm like such a target for any consumer brand. I'm like a 50-year-old woman. I like nice things. I have, you know, some resources. Like, I'm just like, yay, you know, feed me your ad. I will say Necessaire.
Yes.
That's one brand that I'm like, I'll buy an Aesop hand soap, which my kids are like, this is like $50. Like, what? Why would you do that? You know,
there's
and I'm
a
like,
method one that smells just as good.
I'm sure there is. For some reason, I'm like, it's fine with Aesop, but for some reason, Necessaire, every time I see the number, I'm like, I'm not buying it. Like, why do you think some brands can get away with that premium and others can't? Like, what have they done that, even Bachan at Walmart or at Target, it's like $9.99, like, good for Justin. That's amazing. Like, why does I want to hold on to my premium if I can. Right. I don't think I have the confidence, honestly, to put it out there. What do you think it is?
There's some brands that just really hit it right in the marketing. I mean, a lot of times it is just marketing. It's not necessarily the product is any better. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to Necessaire.
It smells really good, but not good enough.
I think I use Garnier and Huron. Yeah. I have some Huron stuff, which is very nice. And my wife uses Pros. She loves that. Swears by that. But I think with Justin's product, with Necessaire, obviously those are a little bit different. Like, beauty is like a whole nother game where I think people do equate the cost with quality, which isn't always the case.
Right.
I think with food and bev, it depends on the product. I think with the sauce, you're not necessarily using it as much. It lasts a little bit longer. People are doing that math in their head. I also think it's like, for that product in particular, like, it's something that I think people didn't know that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the shelf and it looks good. It looks accessible, looks approachable. Mm-hmm. It looks like something that people will want to pull and have in their fridge. And I've seen it a lot.
Yeah.
So I think for that, it's a lot of marketing and the branding and the aesthetic that they put out there. And then also word of mouth often helps with a lot of products.
Right.
Especially the ones that are like a little bit more pricey, that there has to be more decision-making going into it. You need to weigh the costs.
Yep.
Because people, you know, the four P's of marketing, price is, I think, a very important one.
No, I mean, it's a big one. Obviously. But so I want to ask you one more question on the sort of industry thing, and then we'll take a break and we'll get to the newsletter thing. So for those of you who listen to this, everyone knows that I failed Econ 101 my freshman year of college. I was playing off-road in the arcade in the basement of the student center. This was 1990, and off-road was the video game that if you won with your monster truck, you'd never had to put in another quarter. You could just keep winning. And that was really appealing to me. So that's what I did during econ class. And look at me now. But that said, I do know about recoveries, and I know about different shapes of recoveries and whatnot. And I'm drawing a K right now.
Yeah.
Here's my question to you. Do you think that we're about to enter sort of this like bifurcated K-shaped world where you've got, like, I live in New York City, there's wealth upon wealth upon wealth, and then there's like really like very sad, not okay. The city does not look particularly healthy and well right now.
Yeah.
You've got Erewhon, where there are droves of people going there just to show that they have the social equity to go there. Honestly, I don't even know if they're buying all that much. And then you have this C-store thing. Do you feel like we're going to lose out on the middle brands, the middle retailers, the middle consumer? And we're sort of going to end up in this K of high-end elite status, and then on the other side, a value, inexpensive, I don't need an experience, I just want, you know, my soup.
No, I don't really think so. I mean, I think there's always going to be both of those extremes. Obviously, Dollar General is doing very well across the country. I think I had something in my newsletter a couple weeks ago about that. It's kind of amazing. And then obviously the Erewhons of the world are seemingly doing very well too.
Right.
But I think there's more people in the middle, generally in this country, there's more people in the middle than anything.
We just don't know about it.
But I also think even on the coast, where there's a lot of elites and elitism, and people sort of showing off, trying to virtue signal that they are of a certain socioeconomic class, I think a lot of those people actually are not part of that socioeconomic class. You know, I'm 27. A lot of my peers, I see a lot of people, you know, I have friends from undergrad and friends from professional life and high school and camp and all that. And I sort of see them on social media, and there's some people who go to Erewhon. There's some people who are traveling, but I'm like, I know what you do for work. This doesn't, a lot of this doesn't line up. It's a lot of this like virtue signaling, and I think a good way to put it. But I think a lot of them will figure, and I've noticed this too, in just like the types of products that are coming out, especially like dupe culture.
Right.
I think that
is still a thing. Are people, is that still happening?
Oh, totally. Not counterfeits, but like,
no, I mean, just like, I can't imagine deciding to launch a brand right now in this current economic climate, let alone launch a brand that doesn't have like a ton of like substance behind it.
I think the doof culture is interesting, especially when it's more like true luxury goods. Like there's Italic, there's Dossier, which does low cost but high end scents. So they're supposed to mimic Santel 33, like La Labo scents, or I'm blanking on every other luxury. Kenneth Cole? I don't know. Is that luxury? But, you know, those are doing well, and people on, at least on what I've seen on TikTok, there's people are buying this Method hand soap instead of this Aesop one. It smells as good. It's in a metal container. It looks nice. Mm-hmm. You would know the difference. There's also obviously Italic, and there's another brand that's similar to Italic.
You know Quince. So many brands.
Quince is another one. It's luxury goods at cost.
Right.
So there's a desire to have these nice things, but people want middle of the road prices.
Yeah.
And I think Target's success too is a great example of that too. It's a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
And Walmart's are starting to get a little bit nicer too. So people don't necessarily want discount, but they don't necessarily want a lot of luxury in their everyday life.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I just feel like, Target lost some share to Walmart lately.
Yes, for sure.
Lost some mind share also. And Walmart did this whole thing. I mean, I've spent some time thinking about Walmart lately, and even talking, I interviewed Chamberlain Coffee, and she launched, speaking of like all the things, right? They launched nationally at Walmart before anything. A lot of the creator brands are. It's like gotten to be like a thing. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. First of all, you know so many more brands than I do. I feel like I need to study up on my brand thing. I hope you're right, because I feel like it's almost like, you know, you're either shopping for a car that is super utilitarian, or you don't care about utility and you just want something super beautiful and special and luxury.
Yeah.
Similar with watches. I either want like a Timex, or I'm looking for like a groovy, you know, and I feel like I don't want that middle ground to go away. And I think diversity in the ecosystem is so critical, and it just makes me nervous.
I totally see where you're coming from, but I am pretty hopeful that that middle sort of normal average space will do well.
Well, we're in a particular time, and I think that's what everyone just has to always remember. Like, we kind of forgot that we were in COVID, and now we're kind of forgetting that we're just coming out of COVID, and you know, in a couple of years we'll forget that we're like post COVID, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think with the middle ground too, it's like, you can also in that space, you can get little luxuries a lot easier than you can, you know, obviously up or down market. It's a little easier to get like maybe the dupes, or just maybe use a slightly better floor mop or vacuum.
Mm-hmm. I got a better flosser the other day.
There we go.
Like a flosser pick. It was like the floss went in this direction, not this direction, and it felt much better.
Yeah. I think also just the way, like, I'm thinking, obviously I'm biased thinking about the way I shop, but like, I love a Subaru. It's not the cheapest car, but it's not the most luxury car. It's very practical. It still has some luxuries. It still has some, you know, it's still not as expensive. So it sort of fits this bucket. And I think like consumers are hopefully going to go that route, but there will always be like, I always want something very luxurious sometimes, like my iPhone, but that's also, I think, worth every penny.
Yep. Yep. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about newsletters. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
I'm back with Nate Rosen from Express Checkout. Okay, so part deux. We're done talking about the industry. Now we're just going to talk about you.
Sounds great.
Again, I'm going to give you my little thesis and then you can opine. I was reading this thing from Leah Haberman. I think she has a great newsletter too about marketing and super smart. And she was basically sort of questioning whether people trust social media anymore. And social media has sort of become less about your friends recommending something or like people that you trust sort of giving you advice, and more clearly, you know, sponsored, somewhat, you know, entertainment-y, et cetera. And then I started thinking about blogs, where it all began in the, you know, in the 2010s. You were a child, but I was a fully grown-up person. And blogs were great. Blogs were like people who were interested in baking or spices or travel, and they just wrote. And then it got super SponCon-y, super like SEO heavy, where you had to skip 16 pages of SEO keywords to like finally get to the thing that you actually wanted to read. It feels like the newsletter is this kind of sweet spot in between something a little more analog. Like in the old days, there'd be these like aggregators that would like gather newspapers from all around the world and then like put in like what you need to know this week or today before there was the interweb. But also clickable and sort of like interactive and entertaining enough that it feels right for the zeitgeist today. So I'm wondering if that tracks.
I think that tracks very well. I think also hearing you sort of talk about blogs again, I do kind of feel like newsletters are the reemergence of blogs.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect way to put it.
But less annoying.
Less annoying because it almost feels more personal.
Yeah.
It feels like you're getting an email from an individual person rather than going to a destination.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more personal. I think the same way that YouTube videos have always sort of felt, you feel this like parasocial relationship with this individual. Mm-hmm. You can respond to a comment, you can respond to the email, they'll respond, they interact with you, they're mm-hmm. talking to you mm-hmm. rather than sort of talking at you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that tracks perfectly. And like, I think the feedback I've gotten from my newsletter and even from some of my content out there on Twitter and LinkedIn align with that sentiment, that it feels a little bit more personal.
So as a human, like, you are not a brand.
Yes.
It makes sense, right? You're sort of a subject expert. You're generalist in the sense that you have your kind of eyes on everything in the zeitgeist. You're able to gather and to put things into an order that people can click on and follow some sort of a narrative. You know, yeah. you never make, I think one thing I really like about you is while it definitely has a point of view, and I can now, especially that I know you, I can hear your voice saying it. I've never found it to be snarky, and it doesn't sound like you are. Some of the people who comment on our industry aren't actually making this stuff, aren't actually doing this stuff. So they're not really in the ring, as they say. And it's nice to have someone who is commenting, assessing, but not necessarily with too much of like an attitude, I guess, about what's going on. And that's just like who you are. Is that, do you ever have to hold back on a thought that you have and not write it because you're nervous?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But rarely, because even though I've worked at a CPG brand for a stint, I've worked at Settle, where I was able to see a lot of brands and learn a lot about how they operate, and even just knowing a lot of founders. But I don't want to claim to be more than I am, and also I want to start discussions. I want to hear from other people who are doing a lot more, to your point, rather than being this like voice of truth. I want to share and create a community rather than being this, you know, thought leader.
Right.
With all these opinions.
That's a difference. Yeah.
And I also know that I'm missing, you know, certain nuances to it. And I don't want to poke the bear too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think everything you
said
is...
I never find myself yelling at you.
I don't like to be yelled at.
No, but some podcasts I listen to and I'm like, okay, guys, but really, but okay, but... you know, and then...
Oh, same.
You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So this might be a little esoteric of a question, but I'm not on Twitter. I've never been on Twitter or X or whatever it's called.
You don't need to be.
Okay. But so if a newsletter are people that subscribe to you, that you have to take, I would imagine, several hours a week, aggregating, writing, editing, making sure the links, blah, 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 getting it. Is there a shorter form of you? Is that what Twitter is? And is there a longer form where people can kind of dig in more? Like, is that how you think of it? Or are you thinking of it that way?
I think I'm thinking of it that way now. That's actually a very... Yeah, no, I wasn't before. I mean, this newsletter started partially on Twitter. I was doing threads for like 15, 18 weeks in a row, where it's just like 10 to 15 things you missed throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
With the goal, the goal was always to create this newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Once I had the idea, but I wanted to test it out first on LinkedIn or on Twitter. I didn't do LinkedIn, but yeah, on Twitter, it's a little bit more playful. It's a little bit more of just like, what am I thinking in the moment? But like nothing too crazy bits. Mm-hmm. I would say the longer form version of this is meeting me in person for coffee or over a drink or over dinner, or we're working out or going for a run.
Right.
I will start to put out more longer form content, but I think those
that
types
could be
of,
just for, you know, big CPG strategics who pay you for it.
I'll take that.
Yeah, that's my goal for you.
Like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm thinking now, because as we transition sort of from like you as a person to a brand, right? So as a brand, we have social everything. We do have, we have a really nice, like you've probably heard me talk about our email. Our email is pretty killer. And I think part of the reason why, I mean, Maddie and Bridget do an amazing job on our email, but I think part of the reason why we have such a stellar sort of like opt-in list and so many people retain and so many people click through is because we're never really pushing sales. It's always about educational content. And yet we also, our email does have to be very sort of designed. A lot of design, a lot of resources go into it. And while we love it for serving our community recipes, I am wondering if there's a lighter version, you know, like almost like a newsletter, not from us about the industry, but from us about cooking tips, or from us about, you know, other things in the grocery store, you know. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, where would we even begin to do that? You know, how does one start a newsletter?
That's a great question. I think part of it is you have an idea, you have some conviction, you start putting it out, and you get your friends or your network to start sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have more anxiety, like I tend to do, you put out a survey, you ask 1,000 people before you put any right. pen to paper.
Mm-hmm.
But having done this and like having had this idea for a long time and kind of wishing I started it earlier,
mm-hmm.
I think when you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that advice, but it's also very true.
When it clicks, it clicks. Yeah.
It clicks. Yeah. And like, I knew when I was writing and I was like, this is going to be good. And I put out, I remember I put out a tweet a long time ago before I started. I was like, would anybody be interested in a newsletter? I forgot how I phrased it, but it was sort of a prying question to get people to be like, yes, no, maybe so.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember multiple people are like, we don't need another newsletter. And then like 3 issues in, I see that same person posting something like, this newsletter's great. Everyone should read it. I share it with my entire team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when you have a good idea.
Yeah.
Like toot your own horn. It's great. Like,
yeah, no, I think it is great. And then, so, I mean, literally like brass tacks, did you go on like, is it Substack? I don't even know. Like what's the,
yeah, I use Beehive, which is this, basically this, it's in the same camp as Substack. It's slightly different product, but it's Substack. It's almost the equivalent of Substack. It looks different. There's some different functionality. I'm enjoying it a lot. I would recommend it.
Does it hurt your feelings when people unsubscribe?
Sometimes, yeah.
It would really bum me out.
Yeah, I look. I look at who unsubscribes, yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'll just remember that next time I'm at Expo. Uh-huh. Okay, thanks. You come over and you smile and whatnot and you've unsubscribed. Yeah. That was a total non sequitur. But okay, did you just put in, because like with us for an email, you have to opt in to an email list, like as a consumer, we can't just add you to our mailing list. Like, is it the same with a newsletter? People have to opt in?
Yes. I mean, you can technically add people and resubscribe someone if you wanted to. Never done that. I've only grown this pretty organically. I've shared it with some friends. They've shared it with other people. There's a recommendation feature in Beehive where when you subscribe to someone, it'll show you other newsletters that you recommend.
I've gotten that.
Right. So when you subscribe to mine, it says Eli Weiss's newsletter and Curb Your Millennialism, which is my friend Andy's newsletter.
That's kind of funny.
I recommend it. It's actually very good.
Okay.
It's also a wonderful name. That
is a great name.
Yeah, encapsulates it all.
Yes. Yeah.
Very well.
That's very funny. Okay. Yeah. The other thing is there, you know, in our case, right? Like I would say single most important thing that we need to offer our email subscribers is something that makes their lives better, some educational content. Would you say that that's the same for a newsletter, or would you say there's something about ease of reading or filling in a gap? Like, what would you say sort of is the most, do you try to make sure every week before you're hitting click, go, send, whatever, have I done this for my readers? Have I done this for my subscribers? What would you say?
100%. I definitely created this newsletter for me as like a mechanism to keep up to date and make sure that I'm actually logging and reading everything that I said I would read.
Right.
Which now I very much do. But the goal was always to be informative, to help, to educate and keep people up to date. Like I can't think of one newsletter. I can think of newsletters that I read that are definitely more self-fulfilling than actually helpful. Like you read them, you're like,
you just wanted to talk about the color paint of your room.
Yeah. Right. Or it's like, this is really a vehicle for you to get sponsors.
Right.
For you to have passive income,
which
I've started to sponsor my newsletter.
Yeah. I want to talk about that. Yeah.
But yeah, I think most newsletters, most people go into that with the notion of, I feel like I have something to say that no one else is saying, that or not enough people are saying that I want to get out there, that I think people will find a lot of value from, and I want to bring value to people. I think most times it's always gonna be a little self-fulfilling. You're putting your voice out there, like you're creating something and trying to get an audience from it. That's self-fulfilling. Yeah. But I think most people go into it with like, I have this thing to say, I really just want to say it. I want other people to know about it too, because it's going to benefit their lives.
Yep.
Whether it's about the future of commerce, which there is a newsletter and organization, Future Commerce, mm-hmm. Or if it's like Emily Sundberg's newsletter about sort of just culture and some other business stuff. And yeah, I learned stuff from that. And there's so many other examples.
I know. I got on some list for a newsletter that I don't even know how it landed in my email box, but I've started looking forward to it. I don't even, wow. She writes about these like social media phenomenons. The last one she wrote about was like hashtag trad wives, like traditional wives. I'm not on social media. I have nothing. All I have is LinkedIn, which I don't even think of as social media.
I don't either.
Some people may differ. I don't. But oh my gosh. And she wrote one on like Bama Rush.
Rush is wild.
Oh my God. I didn't even know this was a thing. But anyway, she writes this very, it's almost like you're reading a dissertation. And it has like pictures and it has examples. So this traditional wives thing is like crazy town. It's literally like women being like, we shouldn't go to college. We should just have babies because that is God. Wow. And that makes us true women. Like on a lot on the internet right now on Instagram.
Yeah. And I think the wonderful thing about like newsletters like that is even me, who I'm on a lot of socials, I'm on TikTok, I'm on whatever. Mm-hmm. I try to keep up to date. I've never seen that. I've never heard of that. That has never crossed my radar. But like, these people who are creating this newsletter or even do TikToks and YouTube videos and all this stuff, they're the ones who keep up to date.
Yeah.
They tell you the condensed version, so you don't need to know anything.
Yeah.
And then you're off with your day, and you're kept abreast of everything that's going on.
It's like anthropology. It's so cool. I mean, I literally was like, awesome. I don't know why I'm so riveted by this, but I am riveted and reading it and sending it. Okay. More questions for you. Do you have guidelines for yourself? What I include, what I don't include, again, kind of going back to like what I'll say, what I won't say. Are they structured guidelines? Are they just sort of internal? Part B of that question is, when there are sponsors involved, and now there is a bit of, you know, sponsorship involved, did that change things for you? Because now you're sort of, now you're answering on some level, or you're representing, or you want them to feel quote unquote safe advertising with you, which I love when people talk about they don't feel safe advertising on Twitter. Has that evolved for you? And like, what does that look like now?
Yeah. So I'll start with the first part of the question. So I do have guidelines. They're not written down anywhere. Or at least I don't think I've written them down anywhere unless I blacked out and wrote them down somewhere in a drunken stupor, writing down newsletter guidelines, something I would do. Mm-hmm. They're pretty loose right now. I think I could probably narrow them down a bit more. And honestly, like my newsletter is pretty dense, and I bet I could even condense it a smidge more. But yeah, I do have guidelines. Like I'm not really talking about restaurant, hospitality, mm-hmm. quick service, unless it's very relevant to making, selling, buying, shipping a product.
Right.
I probably won't talk about it. Like I think it's interesting to me, but it's just like, it's way too much. Like that just throws it over the line where I'm not able to finish. I won't be able to finish this thing.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I don't throw in too many opinions. I want to throw in more of my voice, though. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that every issue sounds like me. If I was telling you something, I want it to come off in the newsletter. I don't want it to sound necessarily like juvenile, because I feel like the way I try to write my voice on paper could come off young. Not that that's a bad thing, but like
it comes off friendly.
Okay. That's great.
To me.
I just don't want it to come off too immature or anything.
Right.
But yeah, like, you know, those are really the guidelines right now. There's not much more.
Do you feel different writing it knowing that there is a sponsor?
No.
Okay.
Because I took a while to get a sponsor, mm-hmm. mostly because it wasn't the main focus. I wanted to figure this out. I wanted to grow it. I wanted to build it. With the sponsor, you know, I'm very lucky that I know a lot of people in this space that I feel like I can ask to be a sponsor. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of interesting people inbound for sponsorships. And I'm very upfront with anybody who I'm going to ask to be a sponsor that, like, here's what you get. And that's going to, like, that's it. Like, I'm not going to play to their game necessarily. Not that anybody I've talked to so far has really had an ulterior motive.
Yeah, I was going to say, would you say no to anybody?
I would probably say no to someone depending on what they were asking. Because it's not worth hurting my relationship with the audience just for a sponsor when right now this is not like the main thing. It's a big thing that I'm doing, but I feel like I don't have to bend over backwards for a sponsor when there's so many people who I'm sure would provide sponsorship. And like, I also want to work with the sponsor to make something that makes sense for them. Cause there's plenty of people who I've seen reach out, or like I've seen sponsorships in other newsletters and I'm like, that this is irrelevant to your audience
for some reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you're just, and to me, it's like, oh, you're kind of just taking their money and that's fine. They're willing to part with it. But I think that's silly. Like,
are you finding it? Are you starting to see that it's leading to other things? Like, is it starting to become its own thing?
The newsletter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to, and I also like have a lot of appetite to build it beyond just the newsletter. Like, I want to build this into more of a media platform where I do deep dives, partnering with some data provider.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do more interviews. I would love to do a podcast eventually.
Great.
In some capacity. Somebody was suggesting I do like a daily or every other day podcast, like the best one yet.
Is that a podcast name?
It's a podcast name. Okay. So every day it's two guys. They talk about the news.
That's fun. You really have to stay up to date. Yeah. No, I was thinking, I actually was thinking for you to do a week, like one, like a podcast version of the newsletter, which is basically, here's what happened this week. Bring on a guest, talk about, you know, all right, we have to finish up because I promised Liam that I wouldn't go over the hour.
Okay.
My last question is, yes, can you tell us anything about this stealth thing that you're doing, consulting something, something?
It is a CPG product.
Okay.
I am helping the founder. I'm doing a bunch of work for it. It is very pre-launch.
Okay.
Around the coffee space. That's all I can say right now.
Amazing.
It's not coffee.
Love it. All right. That's very enigmatic.
Yes. Stay tuned.
I will. Okay. And just how do people get the newsletter?
So you can go to expresscheckout.co. Bring you right to the newsletter. You can sign up. You can also always find me on Twitter at Rosenzone. I made it in middle school. I've had it for a long time.
I like it.
And on LinkedIn. And Rosen on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Nate, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was super fun.
Thank you for having me.
I think we should all start thinking about newsletters. It's just a thing. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Not to compete with yours, just for our own audiences. Liam, thank you so much for engineering. As always, I'm 1 minute over, but I'm going to do this really quickly. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. And let me know if you want, you know, we can add another sort of pop culture newsy sort of, you could be like a spinoff podcast.
Be interesting. You know?
We could do something. Anyway, I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.